love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam, hands-free, from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. We have a great show in store for you today, coming off the back of a very headline-worthy show last week. Dean Thomas making waves in the industry with his comments, particularly on Khamzat Chimaev and whether his title reign for the UFC would be a disaster. A lot of feedback on that. People making YouTube videos longer than our interview, but I love it. This means we're doing something good here, right? I hope. I am by no means trying to put this on to make controversial statements or anything like that. I invite the analysts on. I come up with topics. We debate them. They give their piece. I push back when I can. I ask follow-up questions, all that stuff, but not here to try to take the wind out of their sails or put them down. We all have our opinions on the sport, and that's what makes it so great. To sit around the bonfire and debate. It's the point of the show, folks. So appreciate all the feedback sincerely to that program. A great chat, I thought, with Dean, and all the comments and reactions means a lot. We were trying to at least make some indent on the podcast space, the interview space, and the MMA coverage space here on the bonfire. And we're going to try to keep that going here today. Another great guest on the show, Mr. Chael P. Sonnen, going to return to the program because I have some questions, folks. We are a little over halfway through the 2025 schedule. We know a lot of the events coming up, most of the headliners, most of the locations, most of the dates, a few undetermined to be announced at this point, but it's all coming together. And I want to know five of my biggest questions. How are they going to be answered in the UFC going forward? A plethora of different topics I'm going to propose to Mr. Sonnen and get his feedback. We're going to debate, discuss what we do every week here on the bonfire. Before I get into that, just want to make a personal note, a personal shout out. This past week was my 12-year anniversary at MMA Junkie and USA Today and Gannett. Just wanted to shout out everyone from the current coworkers, the former coworkers, the future coworkers, just everyone who has helped make my time there so special. The platform I've been given at MMA Junkie has been something, of course, very special and has led me to here today. So I never take it for granted. It's truly an honor to cover the sport and wouldn't be able to do that without the great athletes, the managers, the PR people, the behind the scenes people, the coaches, everything. The list goes on and on. I'm not trying to name individuals here because this would be a 20-minute open. So I'm not trying to do all that, but I just wanted to express my gratitude to everyone, I guess, for helping me get to this point. And all the feedback I got, the little posts I did on my social medias about this anniversary meant a lot to me. It's just encouragement to keep pushing. I hope I'm doing something right here. I just love the sport so much, love the people involved with it and trying to cover it to the best of my ability. So that is my heartfelt little piece here on that. Please make sure to subscribe to the channel, subscribe to the audio platform if you're listening that wise. Comments, reactions, all that stuff mean a lot. Get us into the algorithm. You all know. I try not to beg for any of this stuff. I hope it organically gets us to where we need to be. And I have all the faith and confidence that will be the case because that's the stance I've taken. But I guess no shame in begging a little. So do what you can if you can. Means a lot. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back with a long chat with Mr. Chael P. Sonnen.
Oh, hello, Fruity Boots. I see you got a haircut.
Yes, I did, Chael. Welcome back to the bonfire. Appreciate you being here, as always.
Something else is there. Did you just comb it? I feel like you just styled it.
Yeah, it's, I'm testing some things out for the wedding here, Chael. It's a little over a month away, so I'm trying to, you know, see what works, what doesn't, what gets awesome. The approval from the missus. You know how it goes.
Well, but that's a very risky game that you're playing. I mean, 1 month before, like, that might give you, in theory, a chance to grow out and then she can change it. But I don't know. I wish you'd have done it 5 weeks before, not four. I'm just saying. That's a little tight.
I agree. I know. There's some conflict. She likes it very long. I like it on the shorter side. Obviously, have to side with what she wants, though. It's It explodes once the humidity gets into it. So not too bad.
Are you having your fancy schmancy.com friends at your wedding? Is it going to be, like, just a whole bunch of your fancy schmancy media friends?
Only two other media members. I wanted you there, Chael. I know we had talked about well before I even proposed, maybe you officiating, but I'm reluctant to say the event is happening in Canada, and I know that precludes you.
It was such an insincere invite by you.
It was not.
It was so you threw it out
you
there.
To be officiating.
You know I can't get into Canada. They don't let gangsters into Canada.
I know. It's unfair.
Have you ever tried that? You got anything in your pet? Do you know how hard it is to get across that Canadian border?
It can be hard to get across the U.S. border, too. So I think it goes both ways these days, especially.
They took my phone one time, and I had this dirty text with Miss Brittany.
Oh, yeah.
And they were reading it. And then he calls another guy over. They're both they're like making faces. Like, that's so inappropriate. You don't have to embarrass it. Like, come on, man. I gave you my phone. You don't get to go through the text messages, and I'm...
They do, shockingly. They've done that to me as well.
Yeah.
In the phone. It's, they can do whatever they want. That's a lawless room once you walk into that extra security room.
They brought it back to me. Like, this wasn't me just watching and knowing what they're doing as they're giggling. They came and showed it to me and they said, "Is this a prostitute?" They said that. Did you know her? She got nothing to do with my trip. That's her right there. I'm trying to explain. No, it was awful. It was really awful. Like, you don't have to do that to a guy. You want to know why maybe that's on my mind? I just made a piece. I'm over at my studio.
Yep.
My meager studio. It's nothing like what you're used to. And I'm talking to my meager YouTube channel on my up-and-coming podcast. Nothing like your fancy schmancy wedding friends, but I'm doing what I can over here. And I did a piece on Brock Lesnar. Hmm. And I just got done with this. And I got to tell you, like, I don't have a love lost for Brock. Brock did not greet any friends in the media. He had plenty of people, I'm sure you're on the list, I know that I am, that have gone to him and said, "Hey, do you want to do some media?" And he really could have helped us. That was a big name. It would have been a big get. And he told us all the same thing, which was no.
Yep.
So when he ends up in a jam and he needs a friend to come bail him out, he don't have any. But either way, it does seem like for a guy, a consenting adult, who sent a dirty message to another consenting adult, who, by the way, is not complaining about it, is not saying that she had any kind of problem with it whatsoever. It just got leaked out and they canceled him. Vince McMahon right now, this is a piece that I just did. So I'm just telling you why this was like on my mind. And we spilled into Canada and all of a sudden I'm revealing these things about talking to Miss Brittany. So Vince has a roadmap right now to get back. Not just to get back uncanceled and on TV. He has a roadmap. He is currently soliciting the funds to come back and buy the entire organization back from Ari and TKO and restate himself as chairman of the board. Now, whether he gets there or not is a different conversation. There's at least a road back for Vince. There's not even a road for Brock, and Brock's not the one that was accused, charged, accused, nothing. They subsequently stumbled on a couple of messages from Brock. I mean, can you agree with me on this? Not to mention, it's been almost 2 years. There's nothing in the world that we're still reporting on that happened 2 years ago. It would be the opposite of news. It would be in the past. They wrote an article today, and it's all based on something that Daniel said. Daniel was doing an interview with Demetrius. Demetrius brings up Brock, and Daniel kind of stops him. Whoa, hey, don't even bring. He's in a lot of trouble. Kind of like, hey, I don't want to get associated with that.
Right.
And the media is still running that. Well, Daniel said he's in a lot of trouble, acting like they don't know what it is. Instead of just coming out and saying, Brock got embarrassed here. They greatly overreacted by canceling him, and they ought to consider bringing him back. That wouldn't be bad. There would be nobody that would get stuck in something. I can't believe Brock does it. This is my entire point. I can't believe Brock has nobody that stood up for him.
Yeah, I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if he appeared on WWE television at some point again down the line, you know.
Do you need him though? I mean, he's 100 years old. I mean, do you need him? And then is he still juicing? That's a perfectly fair question. Like one of the reasons that he cheated that body is, you know, he was doing that for for active college wrestling than he was doing that for UFC. He was doing that to look good on camera. He's a guy that if he got off the needle for 4 months, you could walk right past him. You wouldn't even know it was him. So I'm just asking these questions. I don't have the answer, but do they need him? Like, yeah, the crowd would pop, but do you need a 50-year-old man back? And the answer might be yes. They brought Goldberg back in a few weeks ago. It was bad, but they did it.
Yeah, that seems to be something that combat sports, even if it's, you know, the WWE side, can't get away from, the nostalgia characters, sure. The people that remind us. And, you know, it's crazy that you bring this up because we just passed the anniversary of Brock Lesnar's 9 years since his last UFC fight, and actually just passed on August 1st, 10 years since Ronda Rousey won a UFC fight. Her last UFC win against Betch Kahea was 10 years ago, August 1st. Where's the time gone, Chael?
Yeah. No, it's interesting, and it does go that way. Mm-hmm. I used to go places with Henry. We'd go places, and I'm trying to get through a mob of people, you know, and he's getting completely ignored. And the last time I was somewhere with Henry, not only had that reversed where they're cheering for him, but they asked, hey, could you take the camera? Could you get a picture of, and saying, you know, I'm doing these pictures for Henry. I'm just sharing, like, you know, it does change. It goes very quickly. And I'm all for, I don't really understand when the Ronda story gets told, and it could be by Dana himself. She was this massive star. And I don't know. I mean, he will go out of his way to mention that, but there's just no numbers to support that. There's no live gate record. And I don't just mean that it's all been beaten. She never had a live gate. They went all the way to top 10.
Yeah.
She never had a pay-per-view, even a rumor. She never had an attendance or, I'm just sharing with you. There is nothing, including merchandising, that supports this idea, but we're all supposed to go along with the narrative. And that's weird to me. I'm all for saying what happened, and I'm forgiving people their due, even your enemies. If it's not what happened, I don't think you should be able to use it. That one's always been confusing for me. And now so much time has gone by, no one even knows who he's talking about when he says it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, maybe the numbers, she didn't get, you know, Conor McGregor pay-per-views and stuff, but I can't get out of my mind, like, it sees the memories that pop up 10 years later, like literally Ronda at her open workout going to the beach in Rio de Janeiro and like locals literally crying just at the sight of her and like hysterical.
You're kidding.
What's that?
Wow, she got that kind of reception.
And, you know, everything up to that point, if you were a non-Brazilian, they're telling you you're going to die. And they were
That's special.
She was one of her own.
No, that's incredible. I didn't mean to cut you off. That's incredible. I had one meeting like this ever. I'm out with Stephen Quinn, Mandalay Bay Lupo. Well, it used to be my favorite Italian restaurant. They've totally destroyed it. But it used to just be so wonderful. And we're at Lupo, and Stephen brought a couple of guests. And the wife of this couple is telling me all about Ronda, and she never met her. So I'm assuming, as a huge Ronda fan, she would like me to go, you know, to kind of tell her, show her how the sausage is made and how this edit was done and what actually happened here. And I'm trying to impress her. I'm only having this conversation because she's such a mark. She would not have it. She kept stopping me. She knows that's not true. Mm. She's been watching The Ultimate Fighter. She can see it in Ronda's eyes. And I never said anything bad about nothing. I was just letting her know how some of these things were done and the direction that they're actually going in. And it was weird. That was my biggest Ronda story that was weird. I've actually never had somebody tell me how much they knew somebody from watching them on The Ultimate Fighter. I've gotten a few of those crazes. I get them on Twitter. Hey, man, I got this thing going on, and only you would understand. I said, we've never met. And I've fallen for it. Give me your number. What's up? Anyway.
Yes, we have fun talking about the past, Chael, but the reason I wanted to bring you on today is to speak about the future.
You know, you're such a dick. You do that to me every time. Like, I come into this, think I'm catching up with an old friend.
We are.
That's what I feel like. And you're like, no, man, I got an agenda.
I just want to be sensitive to your time.
Give me what I want. Give me what I want. Which, by the way, you will invite me to your next wedding, right? Like, I realize I didn't get this one, but for your next one, maybe I will be the one that marries you.
Yeah, we hope not that there's a number two, but...
Oh, yeah, Mikey, there's going to be...
Anyhow, Chael.
You got heartache and disappointment in your future, my friend.
I hope not, but we'll see. I guess...
You have a sensitive side. I take it back. I didn't mean it. No, she loves you. I didn't mean that. I was just kidding.
She's sitting right outside the room listening to us, too.
Oh, you're such a kiss-at. God damn it. See, you got to disclose that stuff up front.
It's okay, Chael. She loves you. Right. She's sad you're not there officiating with us as well. But as we look forward, Chael, I wanted to bring you on to ask you what I consider the five biggest unanswered questions as we close out the year here.
Oh, back to what you want. Yes. I'm the guest, but let's just do what you want.
You are the guest.
Go ahead.
We're trying to give
five big questions. Let's start with number three.
You want to start with number three? Okay, let's go to number three. Number three, UFC 320. We get the announcement, Merab Dvalishvili coming back, defending his belt for the third time this year against Corey Sandhagen. Only seven other fighters, Chael, have ever defended a title three times in a calendar year. He wants to be the first to get to four. Can he do the unthinkable and beat Corey Sandhagen and fight again in December?
The unthinkable. He's a 4-1 favorite.
No,
can he do the unthinkable?
Question. Not beat Corey Sandhagen.
What is Sandhagen paying you on the side? I actually got a, I'm looking over here. I'm not losing focus on you. I have a Sandhagen shirt.
Okay.
I had put Sandhagen down. And I felt bad about putting Sandhagen down. But it all comes back to the night where Joe Rogan was an instrument to rob Aljo Sterling and give a world title fight to Sandhagen. They're in the process of doing this negotiation, and Sandhagen doesn't know. Everybody knew what they were doing, including Aljo. And Sandhagen didn't know his own division. He didn't even know they were robbing a title fight. He gets done with that interview. They walk right up to Aljo and say, congratulations, you're going to be fighting for the title. So... But I felt bad about doing that. And then when people would screw up in MMA, when they would do something really stupid, I would refer to it as a Sandhagen. And in my own little ecosystem, that caught on. People would be leaving me come, hey, man, did you see this? What a Sandhagen. And I felt bad about it. And I thought that I could, like buy my way, buy his forgiveness for $20 in his online store. So I bought myself a Sandhagen. I was going to grab it, but I don't see where it is. At any rate. Can he do the unthinkable? Can he beat Merab? No, of course not. That's ridiculous. But, not even close. But, can he show improvement? Yeah, he's got a real opportunity here. What Sandhagen did, and one thing you must give him credit for, is that dude who started off pretty damn good. I mean, people could see right away, whoa, this guy's a pro, has only gotten better. Like, each time he's fought, he's better. If you go and look at his fight with Nurmagomedov that was supposed to be a squash match, that officially went in 3-2. And by the way, within the two, and even the three that he lost, there was a lot of defensive wrestling done, which was a tool that Sandhagen himself has said that he needs to sharpen. And I just thought that it was incredible how he gets better, because that's the one reason you can't put him at 4-1. In fact, he opened at 4-1 with DraftKings. It's down to 3-1 right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that might get a little closer. That could go off as tight as about 2.5. It won't get any better than that. But I'm just sharing for you, like a lot of people do see what I see, which is, hey, wait a minute. All we need here is for Merab to not understand what a hard match he's in. All you need for a champion to fall apart, nothing will cause an upset more than when the guy that's supposed to win finds himself in a match that's harder than he prepared for. And... Sandhagen will give him that, most likely. Sandhagen has gotten better each time. It's a style issue. It's a style issue where Merab doesn't waste much time. He comes across, he cuts you off, he puts you in that fence, he gets you down. There's a style issue. And no, Sandhagen won't win that fight. But Sandhagen's the right guy for the job. He deserves the opportunity.
Yeah. If Merab wins, does he have Fighter of the Year locked up by October 4th?
No, Fighter of the Year is going to be very tough. It's very tough, and Merab's done a very good job. But to get in front of Ilya, like, there is a buzz around Ilya that almost like anything that we've ever felt. Chimaev is going to be of interest. Should Alex Pereira come back and be able to get over an Uncle Iyev? I mean, no, Merab does not have it locked up. However, I do admit he's a contender, and a lot of that list comes down to popularity, which, by the way, Merab's got now.
Yeah,
Merab has it now. That dude's a star. I was at International Fight Weekend. The mobs and the crowd, the number one guy, they walked everyone through there. Everyone. Dana himself got more, but I'm not counting Dana. For active fighters, the crowd and the interest, Merab could not move around. I mean, I'm just sharing with you. He is over. He is very popular, and people are going to vote for him. But no, activity alone, no. No, it will not get you fighter of the year.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, all those other guys would just have one fight, though. I mean, unless Topuria fights again this year, then who knows how that changed. What about this Chael, though? What if he
beat... And I'm counting on that, too. Ilya does not have it locked up with one. He needs another, and it needs to be a big one. It's going to be Sarukian. I think it's going to be in December, but that's not done.
Yeah. Well, Merab said, you know, at the beginning of the year, ideal world, he would defend the title four times this year. So if he beats Corey and then turns around again fast in December and beats Piotr Jan... Then is he a lock for fighter of the year? Four title defenses. No one has ever done four title defenses in 1 year, Chael.
That's very impressive. I think what you're saying in those stats, maybe I need to hedge a little bit because those stats do matter. Anytime you're setting history, it moves you kind of to the front of that list. Have you ever met Merab?
Many times, yes.
Okay, well, then you know. You would agree with me. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful person.
Yeah.
Like, that's a nice man behind all of this. One of the things that takes fighters off their perch quickly is when they start believing what's being said about them and they go to practice a little less. And you don't meet better people as you become bigger and better in life. You meet a higher quality scumbag. Like the scumbag might pull up in a limo and he might have a 3-piece suit. He's still a scumbag that's trying to leech on you. And I'm just sharing. It doesn't seem like Merab's falling for any of that. Not to mention he's in Las Vegas, which is a very difficult place to not meet a lot of scumbags. He seems to be very focused. He seems to know who he is. He seems to still be hungry. I think he deserves credit for that. I think one thing that would help Merab is just if people got to know him more. Because you and I could sit around and talk the most beautiful thing. I mean, he really is a kind gentleman. You can't say that about a lot of fighters. Most of them are scumbags too. He's in a different category. And I only bring that up because of his popularity and where it could go. If people simply get to know him, if he finds a way to get his message out, he comes across what he is, which is very nice. But he's so nice that people kind of think it's an act. But it's not. And so if he does a little bit more time, and I would love to see Merab, just for example, coach the Ultimate Fighter. I think he would do a great job, for one. But I think that kind of exposure, where people got him in their living room each day, I think Merab has the potential to be the top draw in the sport. That's a big claim for a 35-pounder.
Yeah.
But O'Malley had it. Yep. O'Malley was the big. He's got the bigger box offices than Pierre, and I'm going back a year, but I'm just sharing. It can definitely be done.
Yeah, and I think he's a perfect example of how just competing consistently can get you over with the fans and make you beloved. People did not like this guy going into his first fight with Sean O'Malley, and now he is a absolutely endeared figure, and that's because he keeps getting out there. So
I'm in the same boat, and it's not just because O'Malley might be my favorite fighter. It's not just because of that. I just wasn't sold on it. You know, and I fought a lot like him, cut people off and try to take them down. And so I realized my hypocrisy, but I, in many ways, felt the same way. Hey, let's get this guy out of here. We got to give him an opportunity. He's gone 10 straight. Sean, get this guy out of here. And I wouldn't have really thought twice about it. It wasn't even him beating Sean. The night he became a star, I don't know if you were there, but if you were in the building, you'll definitely agree with me, was the night of Nurmagomedov. Mm-hmm. That was the Rocky moment where that crowd turned and they all came to Merab. That was a co-main event. He goes from headlining the Sphere. They demoted him. They took him from headlining the Sphere to a co-main event of a product in California that Moicano was the top of the bill. Not for nothing, but I'm just saying that was the night when they go, hey, wait a minute. We've got something special on our hands. Then when you put him back in there with O'Malley, that was such a great bar because we knew how he could do with O'Malley. So now it's a question of, is he getting better? And he did show that he's still hungry. He did show that he has growth. He did show that unlike most fighters that will only learn in defeat, he can also learn in victory. It was a big deal. Most fighters do not do that. And I will tell you, my camp was guilty of it too. If we won a fight, no matter how we won it, if we won it, it was only celebration. Now, if we lost, there would be meetings and we sit down and we break down the film and we would change things in training, but only in defeat. It's very rare that a person learns and grows in victory, but he did.
Yep, he's been on a roll. So not a lock for Fighter of the Year, but Chael Sonnen very high on Merab Dvalishvili. Chael, number two question here. What direction is the middleweight division going? Who is going to rule this thing by the end of 2025? So much going on. Paulo Costa gets the big win. Renier DeRitter gets the big win. And we have a huge main event coming up at the Apex, I guess if you call it that, between Roman Dolidze and the underrated Fluffy Hernandez. But then that brings us to the title fight. Drickus and Hamzat. Everyone is stoked for this. Both seem extremely ready. They're both already in the States. Just how high are you on this fight? And I guess the champion of this.
Well, and I love the names that you mentioned, but let's just add to your list. The biggest draw, the one that the hardcores, but the one that's over the most is actually Kyle Brawl. That is the one that the fans are really pushing forward. And you and I would be disrespectful pricks if we don't mention Imanov.
Of course.
He deserves to be mentioned, for goodness sakes. He's right behind Brawl. Okay. How big am I on this main event? This has surprised me in a couple of ways. When Chimaev got done with Whitaker, the mythical line of Dricus Chimaev came out, and it was 3-1. And 3-1 represents not only a victory by the betting public, but a dominant victory. By perspective, Islam versus Charles was 3-1, just by perspective. So that not only has changed, there was a brief period, and it was less than an hour, Dricus became the favorite. Now, it quickly bounced back, but these guys are almost even money. And that changes based on, I mean, money's, this line is very unusual. What this line has done is almost like any, almost like no fight that I've ever seen, but I'm only sharing with you. It turned out that Dricus is way better than he got credit for. It turned out that he's closer to as good as he says he is than we thought he was. But it's still Chimaev. That is the media darling. That is the unbeaten. That is the wolf of the division. And I have been surprised that it's moving, and it's moving in my heart too. I'm feeling it too. Hey, listen, Chimaev's got to get him down. Like, he can't just go out and fight him anywhere. And then there's a big question around Chimaev's conditioning. I don't know that that's fair. We have seen Chimaev get exhausted, but Fedor used to get exhausted, but he never stopped. Yeah. It never slowed him down. And that's the same thing with Chimaev. I don't think that it's fair to question his condition. I think he's got a bunch of energy and he uses it all, which is what he's supposed to do. So that's going to get tested. We are going to find out if that's accurate. But yes, I also am giving Dricus a lot better look than I was when Chimaev and Whitaker was done and the fight got announced.
Yeah, and the conditioning thing is interesting because Khamzat, by the time this fight comes around, he'll be in the States for like 6 weeks, and he's been out in California at the training lab with Sam Calavita, who's that guy who's worked with Aaron Pico, TJ Dillashaw, Juan Archuleta, all these guys for years, one of the best in terms of strength and conditioning. How much
does that? I got to throw myself in. I'm a Calavita
Beautiful.
Guy.
So give us the insight. How much more prepared is this going to make this man spending 6 weeks there leading into the fight?
Well, training at the training lab has never hurt anybody. I think we can agree to that. Now, is there any level of fitness that right? I mean, it's one of those things where I think Chimaev was, I think he was in very good shape. Here's the other side of that coin. And I'm a big Calavita guy. I just got off the phone with him. I mean, this guy's master, and not to mention everybody respects him. This is a good man. He's a father of 11. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's a wonderful man. One thing about that, and it is interesting, I spent a lot of time thinking about this because my own son is now getting into sport and I want to give him advice. I want him to get a fast track. I wanted to take the things that I did wrong and not give it to him. And strength and conditioning is an interesting debate. If it becomes your hardest workout of the day, that's not good, because there's nothing that you're going to do in strength and conditioning that you see in the octagon. You hope and assume it converts, but why would it? Why would pushing a sled when there's no sled in the octagon? Why would that convert? Why would doing 100 pull-ups when there's no pull-up bar in the octagon, right? Just for example, so I'm saying the strength and conditioning should not be your hardest workout of the day. It should be a good supplement workout, and then you go into sparring. You go into live wrestling on the ground, and that's where your real energy gets burned. And that is not the case now. The strength and conditioning is the hardest part of the day. He is putting less into fight training mm-hmm. than he used to because he's not showing up with the same energy. And I've done that one time. And by the way, it ended up leading to the best performance of my career. So there is
that?
A maybe. Anderson Silva part one.
Okay.
But the bet where I was going out, I threw more punches than I'd ever thrown. I was in this great condition, and I'm just sharing. That is what I did. My hardest workouts were the strength and conditioning, and the boxing and everything else wasn't because I didn't have the same energy. I'm just sharing with you. There's a debate. It is not obvious that because you do something different, you're going to get a better result. It is generally believed if you do something different will happen. But we all got to sit back and figure out if for Chimaev and his style, that's going to be a positive or not. I think that's a little critical by me, but I also think it's a fair comparison.
I think it's super fair, especially because he said before the Whitaker fight that some of the health issues were stemming from overtraining. So like, and he found a good balance. He reduced some stuff, and that, you know, allowed him to get in the cage and perform the way he did against Robert. But yeah, like if you're pushing yourself as hard as we know Sam Calavita pushes those guys, that makes you wonder. But hopefully, all is in a good spot.
Really, do you really not feel weird telling me this about this wedding that you got when I've known you for a decade and you didn't invite me? We text all the time. Right? You didn't even say. You could have just shot a text off. You know I'm not coming. You know I'm not coming. But I would have mailed you probably the best gift. Do you really not feel a little weird for bringing up your happy day knowing I was excluded?
Well, I felt that the circumstances were enough explanation, but I do feel bad now. It's better to be invited and have to turn it down. So it's not, yes, it's not too late. Rush delivery.
My mission is complete. All right, we're good.
All right, chill. On to point number three here. Question number three. How damaged and how much is at stake for Alex Pereira's star power if you can't defeat Magomed Ankalaev and regain that belt? Like, would be two straight losses, leaves him in a tricky spot. Like, are we talk about Alex Pereira being one of the biggest stars in the sport. How does that change if he's not able to get that belt back?
What an interesting question. And what an interesting position. And the UFC elected to be in it. Listen, Dana made a brand promise when he started this thing. And he said, at all times, unlike boxing, I will put the best against the best. I do not build guys. I do not carry guys. I do not storyline. I bring in the bells and whistles. They figure it out. And nobody thought he could actually do that. Like, it's very difficult to build and have stars if you do that. But Dana did. He did. He knew Ankalaev was a nightmare of a matchup for his biggest draw, and he just lost O'Malley. He just got O'Malley beat in what we knew was going to be a really hard matchup. He went and did it again. Oh, by the way, nobody asked for this rematch. I didn't ask for it. You couldn't go to Twitter. You couldn't go to Google. You couldn't even get Gronk to show you a person that asked for this rematch. And they said, listen, it's the best against best. That's what we do here. Therefore, it's this fight. I thought, and let me tell you something to your viewer, Mike, because people misremember this. If you were to ask a fan how we got Pereira to 205 pounds, the way they believe that happened is he cleaned out 185, but they're actually wrong. It was that he got beat at 185. Therefore, he's free to move divisions. He doesn't have a belt that he's holding up. Now, I tell you that because if he loses to Ankalaev, he becomes a heavyweight. But if he beats Ankalaev, I still wish that he would become a heavyweight. There's not another fight at 205 that I'm dying to see for him. And I only share that, and I think a lot of people would agree with me. And he definitely wants to be a heavyweight. He's even telling that story on his own Instagram, talking to Alex here, where he's putting out pictures where he's on the scale and he weighs 246. Like, he's putting out the message to the audience, I'm big enough to do this. It's what I want to do. But why do we got to get him beat twice? I mean, if he gets beat and therefore he becomes a heavyweight, aren't we in that spot right now? And we were just looking for a fight for Tom. We turned to Surreal, which is another fight nobody asked for. And I really did think that Alex was going to get announced against Tom, just in the absence of John. And what are we going to do? And let's shake it up a little bit. If you bring Surreal in at all, you're not turning the page from John Jones. John is still on the page. In fact, the great winner that night, should Surreal win, will be John Jones. He will get his ranking back. He will get his acclaim back. I mean, everything comes back. He gets more leverage than he's got right now. And for all of those reasons, I would have predicted this wrong. So what happens to Alex if he loses to Ankalaev? That was your question. And I'm going to just share with you, not a lot. He's in that spot right now. Yeah. He just lost to Ankalaev. And people didn't really care. It was a matchup issue. You could still see Alex's skills. As a matter of fact, we even saw his skills are better than we thought. He defended a lot of wrestling, which we didn't think he could do. He got up off the bottom, which we were told is something he couldn't do with Ankalaev. He looked very good. It was a matchup issue. It was a fair adjudication. Let's move on. But we're not.
Yeah.
We're doing it again. And I do think that we need to be prepared for what if Alex loses. There was nothing that any analyst saw in that first fight that would lead you to believe if we do it again, we're going to get a different outcome. There was a matchup issue, and it's the same two guys. And I'm just sharing for you, what are we going to do if he gets beat? First off, he already did. And secondly, he's likely to do it again. And I don't think it hurts him. I still want to see him at heavyweight. That's what I want as a fan. Champ status is amazing. Do you realize that if he achieved that, you and I no longer get to argue about GOAT? We don't get to argue about it. If he goes champ, we just refer to it as Alex Pierre. It's a very interesting thing. I mean, who thought that we'd be in that spot?
Yeah, I mean, well, if it's kicking the can way down the road. But I know Topuria wants that 3-division champion status too, but we'll see how that goes. But I guess just to circle back on Alex.
Topuria is a straight-up gangster. That's another thing that people are misremembering.
Yep.
People are misremembering. This was only 3 months ago. People believe that Topuria went up to fight for a vacant title or that he went up to fight Charles. He went up with his finger in Islam's chest.
Yep.
He gave a belt back and came after the pound-for-pound number one. He didn't keep the belt like Volkanovski did. Well, if I don't win, I'm still champion over here. And I'm not putting Volk down, but that's just not what he did. He took a much bigger risk. He took a much bigger gamble. He came after Islam. So if down the road he wants to come after Islam again, he'll have my support. The idea of Islam returning to come after him, I'll watch it. But if those boys do fight, I do want to see it at 170.
Yep. We will get into that shortly, Chael. More on Alex Pereira, though. I want to say, Chael.
No, your agenda, your fancy schmancy.
Chael, what is the selling point for Alex Pereira, the heavyweight, if he either A, gets knocked out by Ankalaev in the rematch, or Ankalaev has significantly more grappling success and goes that way and he's able to keep him down or hold him down? What is appealing about Pereira coming off 2 losses, maybe a knockout, maybe a submission, to say, oh, if he's getting stopped by strikes at light heavyweight or he can't deal with the grappling here, suddenly we're supposed to think he'll be competitive with the Tom Aspinall or something like that?
The biggest selling point where, like, if that announcement came, if Dana came out and announced it, the reason that that would have been a really big deal, a really big headline, tickets would have sold really fast. The reason is just simply the parody, right? When we can get something new, when we're getting something that we're not expecting. Dana just made an announcement. It was the ultimate tease that I've ever seen him do. But you might have seen this. He told the media, I got something. I'm sitting on it. You guys are going to go crazy. You're going to run around with your heads cut off. He said, and it's coming in 2025.
Time's running short.
You wouldn't tell him. Yeah, it was so. I was so interested. Like, what announcement can you have 8 days after you announce the first fight for your new heavyweight champion? What announcement can you have 12 days after you announce the White House card? Like, what could it be? And one thing that Dana did say within that tease, he said it's something that you'll never have seen coming. And if we're talking a matchup, and I think that we are, but if we are, then you got to have somebody return. You got to have somebody move weight classes. There has to be some kind of shift. Every possible way you could do it at heavyweight, because you got the rankings right in front of you, we've imagined. And I only share that's what Pierre would offer. And he's done it before. If we're to just look at history as a trajectory to the future, Pierre gets stopped at 185. His first stop at 205, he beat a world champion in Blachowicz, which he wasn't supposed to be able to do. He then won the world championship, which he wasn't supposed to be able to do.
Yep.
He then defended it more times, even if not successfully, than anybody else had done in a period of time. The parity, that's what changes. The matchup issue. You talk about if he loses to Ankalaev, and you even said how it would likely happen. He would likely give up more takedowns, or he would likely be controlled a little longer than he would like to be. But I don't think that you would guess that against Surreal. I don't think you would guess that against Tom. I don't think that you would guess that against Blades or Derek Lewis. I think that you would see you got a totally different match with a totally different animal. I think people would be into it.
Yeah.
After 2 losses, I get where it's – I get it. But after 1 victory, he's likely to be in there for the belt.
Yeah. Would you – if he wins, to be positive on the Alex Pereira side, would you drop the belt and go up? Or
I mean, no.
No? You no. stick around and fight the winner of Prohaska and Roundtree? Or
No, he's not going to be in there with Prohaska again, most likely, who's awesome, by
the way. Of course.
But he's just not going to be in there with him again. But therein lies a part of the problem. Like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? I don't know what Ankalaev gets if he wins. He already beat him. Nobody asked for this rematch, including Pereira. Uncle Live asked for it. It was a little bit odd.
Yeah.
Uncle Live actually got a little bit nasty calling, but come fight me. It's like, he just did. What is it that you planned that you're bringing the belt this time? I mean, it really was a little bit of a confusing situation. And then to your point, what happens if he comes and picks it up? Well, the right thing to do would be to go to the trilogy. So now you're telling me we not only got to see him fight Uncle Live again, which we didn't want the first time. We didn't ask for it this time. Now you're telling me we might have to see it for 10 more rounds. I'm just sharing. I think it creates more problems than it solves. That's what I think.
I don't disagree at all. Chael, you got me off track with the wedding question. I did not round out my thoughts on the middleweights here, and I need to know your thoughts the scorching take from Dean Thomas that was on this last week's show that got everyone riled up. This is what he said about the scenario if Khamzat Chimaev wins the title at UFC 319. If Khamzat wins, is Dricus done enough to get an immediate rematch? Do you think he just clears all these guys and it's going to be like, okay, well, you thought you might be next. We can talk about all this, but you're all going to get slid back one spot because Dricus is going to fight for it again.
No, I'm going to keep it 100 with you. If Khamzat wins, it's a disaster, actually, because you can't tell me that a part of you is just like thinking this fight actually might not happen. Some of these guys are just habitual in terms of not making it to the dance. I'm not going to be pessimistic about it and say he's going to show up. But my point is that if he does show up and he does win, do we trust him to be able to fight again? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing, is like, can he do it twice, two or three times? Because we need movement. Like, I hate when it's just like static, when there's no movement in these divisions. And in order for there to be movement in the divisions, the champions have to fight.
What do you think, Chael? Would it be a disaster if Khamzat Chimaev wins that belt?
No, but his point is very fair. The middleweights right now, and I feel that the larger story, by the way, I got to tell you, I also feel that we're a little bit off track with Khamzat missing these fights. That guy during a world pandemic thought he was going to die.
Yeah.
He was on a respirator, and I mean, he was in that really bad shape. It hit a few people, but he was one of them. And then you've got a recovery process from that. And then all of a sudden we find out that he's not allowed to travel. He's offered a world title fight against Sean Strickland, but he's got a broken hand. Like, these are very reasonable excuses.
Yeah.
An excuse and a reason kind of sound the same, but sometimes there's reasons and it's not an excuse. And I'm just saying, I've never looked at the misses fights. I've just never looked at him like that. I've looked at some bad circumstance, but I actually see him quite differently. I mean, the first time we get introduced to him on television, 7 days later, he's back on television doing another fight at a different weight class. Yeah. You know, that was so weird about it. If his first fight was at 70 and the second was 85, we would get it. How did he fight 85 and then was able to make 170? Like, I think he deserves a lot of credit for how much he shows up. But as the king of middleweights, and I will tell you, when I had my run, I had no equal. I was not losing fights. I wasn't losing rounds. I wasn't losing moments of fights. But I will tell you, I didn't have anything as difficult as it is today.
Right.
I mean, we had one or two guys that at that time could be top five guys now. And maybe three guys, you know, that had fit into the top 10. Like, I have never seen 185 so hard. I don't know who the best guy is. I always assumed it was Chimaev because that's what we were told every day. But all of a sudden, this guy named Dricus steps forward. He's this huge pop. I haven't seen anything out of Bo Nickel that makes me believe he isn't good enough to be champion. I haven't seen anything about Izzy that doesn't make me think that he can still disrupt a bracket. Then you've got Imanov and you've got this Kyle Brow. And it was fellow 85-pounders. I can't remember which ones. But they interviewed fellow 185-pounders and asked them about Chimaev and Dricus. And three for three found a way to get off of that topic and get it on to Brow. According to middleweights, that's the boogie monster. Mm. According to fellow middleweights, Barao's the one that you got to be watching. And I only share that because how can you tell me DDR isn't awesome? How can you tell me what Imanov has done isn't impressive? Like, that is murderer's row. And one thing I will accurately tell you about middleweight, whoever comes out of this fight doesn't just leave with the championship. They need to be moved in the pound-for-pound rankings. If you're the champion of 185 and it is deeper than it has absolutely ever been, you that needs to be considered. And I bring this to your attention because I don't think it will be. I don't know that people are realizing this weight class has never been this difficult.
Yeah, it's an incredible division. I agree with your point on Chimaev. Like the actual fight pulling out when the day is coming, there hasn't been much of that. It's just, I think he's had three different times of a year plus between fights since he's been in the UFC, and he's only been here for like 6 years. So I think that's more so like the gaps. You're wondering, it seems like he's good to get in the States. Hopefully he'll fight on a normal schedule. But if he claims that belt and, you know, can't fight until the Abu Dhabi pay-per-view late 2026, then I think that starts to cause problems in a division that, as you said, is extremely deep, and a lot of people deserve their chance to fight for the belt.
Right over your right shoulder. Is that Chimaev? Is that a Chimaev doll? Yeah. Yeah,
it's Islam Makhachev. Shout out to a very nice girl on Instagram named Savannah who handcrafts those dolls, Chill. And I don't know, I think she needs to make one of you. Should I let her know?
She did a fantastic job. Yeah. I really did think that was Chimaev. I see Islam now. I ordered, when toys first came out, I ordered my own toy.
Yep.
And what do you got? What are you pointing
to? That was Chimaev's right there. That's the.
There's Chimaev. Yeah. All right. Oh, I see him. Who's that above him, though? That's Volkanovski.
That's the poster right from that.
Sure. Yeah. Of course. So when dolls first came out, I ordered my own doll. Now, that's a nerdy thing to do, but I just thought my kids might want something. I don't know how long these are going to be. I order my own doll. Yeah. And it comes, and I put it away. I don't want anyone to know that I have ordered my own doll. And by putting it away, it was in an office. It was like a locked office, and it's where I kept all my steroids. Nobody could get in there. And I put it on the other side of the room. And I'm sitting at the desk and I'm doing something. And I've had this thing for months at this point. And it catches my eye. And I start looking a little closer. It was Dominic Cruz. It even said Dominic Cruz on the box. I hadn't looked. I thought it was me, though. Like, the doll came out. So I'm only saying this, like, I wasn't teasing Islam or like, sometimes that happened. In fact, it happened to me. Yeah. I bought the doll, had the doll, was satisfied with the doll, and then found out it wasn't even my doll.
Last thing on this, Chael, so we can hit the files.
No, let's talk about what you want.
No, that question that I asked Dean, if Dricus loses the belt, does he get an immediate rematch in the scenario? Or if Imavov wins, does he get the title shot no matter who, you know, wins that title fight coming up?
Generally speaking, when you have a backup fighter, that is the person that gets the title shot. Even if you got this star and this champion and it should be rematched. And by the way, we just saw that and it was resisted. It was by O'Malley. O'Malley got a shot, then he got another shot. And a lot of people were kind of weird about that. Mm-hmm. I see what you're seeing. I see where you could do an immediate, but I would not predict that. I do believe that Kyle Brown will be next. The UFC just has a history of rewarding those guys. We're seeing at 155 with Sarukian and, you know, Sarukian was in this weird purgatory for whatever that was, the day of weigh-ins for Islam. And he not only got out, like the UFC is an actual appreciation. If you cut the weight, you get the licensing, you travel to town, you got to pay all your managers and corners all the same. I mean, there's a lot that goes on a guy that then doesn't get to compete. And they just have an appreciation for that. And I'm going to predict that it will go to Kyle Brown.
Biggest question number four, Chael.
Am I saying Brown right? Call Brown.
Brown.
Brawlo.
Biggest question number four here, Chael. What are we going to learn about Tom Aspinall in terms of being a draw, his future, and just everything he can do for the heavyweight division at UFC 321? I will say this. He has never headlined a pay-per-view before. This fight's going to be in the afternoon, and Ciryl Gane isn't going to do much to promote it, as Chael flexes here for us.
They didn't put Tom versus Blades. That was not a pay-per-view.
That was the co-main to Leon Edwards and Bilal.
It was the co-main. And, you're exactly
and the Pavlovich
right.
fight okay. was the co-main to Alex Pereira versus Yuri Prochazka one. Tom Aspinall has never headlined a UFC pay-per-view.
Yeah, he hasn't headlined a pay-per-view, but he has headlined and even had the pressures of doing that at home. What are we going to learn about Tom? I will tell you, whenever you take a step down, it's very hard. What he was imagining being in there with the best guy in the world, what he was imagining, the acclaim that he could have gotten, the money that he could have gotten, the arena and the energy, and he's not in that spot anymore. And how does he respond to that? Maybe just fine. Maybe that's never even crossed his mind, but it generally does. And usually you can work that out. You can visualize. There was plenty of time. This wasn't a short notice replacement, but he's still in a different spot than the one that he thought he would be in. And he's also up against it. If this is a long drawn out battle, again, the winner is John Jones. And the bar that John set, you got to understand, Surreal did not compete with John. He left his skills in the back and he came, and that happens. The fight or flight is very real, but he experienced flight. The idea that they would rematch Surreal versus John is outrageous after what we saw. But that's the exact position that you're creating an opportunity for. And if Tom, in fact, is going to be judged to that high of a bar, he's not only got to get Surreal out of there, he's got to get him out of there without being hit, and he's got to do it in under 4 minutes and 31 seconds. Like, there's a massive pressure on Aspinall. If Aspinall can actually go out and do, and he's as good as everybody says, it won't be an issue. But that's also hard to live up to. Matchup-wise, pure matchup-wise, Tom, who six guys that he's put down, but he's done it all on his feet, somewhat wildly with an incredible power, versus a clean, crisp, professional kickboxer that went 27-3. Surreal on his feet. He is one of the most difficult propositions out there. I think matchup wise, unless Tom is going to come out and show us something he's never shown before, which is very possible. I'm told he's got a great double leg and he can do great work on the ground. I'm told those things, but it is a difficult match. And in many ways, it's Tom versus John. In many ways, John is very involved in this fight. They did not turn the page from John Jones by booking Surreal.
No, but I wonder where he fits in, though, right? Because Dana told me in New Orleans when I asked him about John Jones wanting to come back and fight at the White House, he basically said, we can't trust the guy to headline that card. And you just wonder how that evolves. Like, what's the upside, unless you really think Tom's going to win? If John comes back, say he beats him, then what? Is he just going to hold the division hostage for another year?
Yeah, it's a very big deal. It's a very big deal. Do you want to come back and do business with a guy? And I know what the media say, oh, they'll do whatever's good for money. Well, they don't let McGregor back. They didn't let McGregor back when he pulled out of a press conference due to a discolored pinky toe, which may or may not have been broken and may or may not have even be his. Do you remember that? He took a picture of a pinky toe, but not like of him with it. We don't even know if it was his. And I think Conor did that as a troll, like as a total joke. And the media is so scared of McGregor. Like, they didn't even call his joke out. I mean, that whole thing was just very weird. But either way, they haven't done business with him since. And we have seen that before. Tito had created, just go back in the day, some problems. And they just stopped doing business with him. One of my mentors, but Matt Lindland, and whatever happened there, that story was kind of convoluted. But they just stopped doing business with him. Mm-hmm. And I'm only sharing, do you want to do business with John? And there's certain offenses. A guy being a pain in the ass, they're used to it. But once you say yes, I mean, this is a street guy from Boston. There is nothing in front of you saying that word. If you say no, we'll keep talking. There's no hard feelings. But if you say yes and you take it back, I'm just sharing with you, Dana, as a human, that's a big one. You cannot go back. He would have never done it. He never has done it. And when it happens to him, that's, I think Dana was very honest with you when he said, I can't trust him to, he gave me his word once and he broke it. I'm not going to do that again. Not at the White House.
I see all the analysts saying that Tom Aspinall has to win this fight or it's a train wreck for the heavyweight division, all those things, you know, the John Jones element aside of him being able to get on Twitter and be like, I told you so or whatever. But in terms of actually making fights with guys that are here, wouldn't Surreal winning be a great thing for the division? It would make it interesting. You could go back to a rematch, all that stuff. If Tom wins this fight as dominantly as everyone else, what's the interesting thing on the horizon? They just let a heavyweight and Martin Boudet walk after going 7-1 in the UFC. Like, this feels like a division that needs as much health and intriguing layers as it can possibly get.
Well, you and I were referencing 85 middleweight a moment ago and how deep it is, and we've never seen it like this. Heavyweight has never been so thin. Yeah. And I'll just say this as a wrestler, but not only do we not have an All-American, I'll just call it an All-American. I won't even say our world and Olympic, just an All-American. Not only do we not have an All-American in the top 10, we don't have one under contract.
I know.
The heavyweight division does not have one NCAA All-American as a minimum standard, even under contract. It's a very thin division right now. And Surreal's tough. He's a handsome guy, but he doesn't do his end in main events. What Surreal and Francis did, that was the biggest fight in history, storyline-wise. That was Hogan versus Ward, belt versus belt. That I don't know if you know how poorly that did, but it's pay-per-view. I mean, they thought it could break a million. It was under 300,000.
Storyline, all that stuff.
It was so bad. I mean, both of those guys just decided we're not going to do media for it. And I'm only sharing, like, is Cyril a problem? Yeah, a little bit. He lost his last fight. He won the decision, but he lost his last fight. Yeah. He was in terrible shape. He pulled out of an opportunity before that, which I believe was opposite Tom, because he wanted to go make a movie that never even got to the theaters. Yeah, it's a little bit of a problem.
It is. Okay, last but not least here, Chael. This was originally my number one before you forced me to reshuffle at the beginning. Who is going to close the year as number one pound-for-pound fighter? Right now, of course, it is Ilya Topuria. He took over. Islam Makhachev had his comments. You did a great video on your YouTube channel about, you know, the whole promotion element. I agree with what you said. Doesn't really make sense, but these two guys potentially are going to fight. If Islam Makhachev wins in November, assumingly he fights Jack Della Maddalena, I think that's a better second division title win than Ilya beating Charles. I think he'd rightfully get it back. But if Ilya competes in December against Armin or Gaethje or whoever these guys were, then it gets very intriguing if whether he could take it back again. So how do you think this shakes out? If we get one more fight with each of these guys, they win. Who's the number one pound for pound on December 31st?
And by the way, just so we're clear, outside of illness or injury, even if I'm breaking news to you, then I'm not sharing my opinion. Yeah. I'm sharing a fact with you. It's Armin versus Ilya. That is 100% the plan. To your point, let's think about that just for a minute. And Islam really, he was not correct in what he was saying, where he said that this is promotion. He had that wrong, but it wasn't just because the UFC is looking at those guys fighting. That's also a misconception. The UFC has no interest in those guys fighting. That was the fight. Ilya just moved to the division. That fight was an opportunity. They didn't want it, but they didn't want it to the point that they've told Ilya, you can come to 55, but you got to stop. Don't do this to us again. And they told Islam, hey, we'll take you to 70. We'll give you the opportunity, but don't do this to us again. We want figureheads of division. Mm-hmm. I don't agree. I actually don't agree. One of the few things that I disagree with the UFC on. I love champion versus champ. I think it's a huge deal, belt and belt. But they don't. They don't have any regrets that they didn't make Anderson versus John Jones. They don't have any regrets that they didn't make Anderson versus GSP. So, I mean, this is a very consistent belief that UFC is not working towards that fight. That is false. But what Islam doesn't understand is you have a very hard time recognizing divisions and not carrying that to your pound-for-pound list. So you don't have a choice. They can do anything they want with 1 through 10, but champion is champion. So you're looking at a pound-for-pound list. You got a guy who's not a champion. That's Islam. He gets the belt up. So you would now have a non-champion coming over all of your champions. It's the same thing where John Jones returns, but he doesn't return to the list. Where are you going to put him, and how are you going to do it? But John hasn't gotten any worse. John's not worse today with those 9 days off than he was 2 months ago when he was number one. So the whole thing gets a little bit off. But I think that's the part that Islam didn't understand, not to mention – it was paperwork and paperwork alone that stopped Ilya from being the most decorated fighter that we've ever seen. It was not a punch and it was not a loss. They elected to do Volk versus Lopez, which means they stripped Ilya. Mm-hmm. They elected to not put up the BMF title when Ilya fought Max. If they would have done this, just paperwork was different. Mm-hmm. Outcomes are the same. Paperwork's different. You got Ilya Topuria, the 45-pound champion, the 55-pound champion, and the reigning BMF champion. There is no way that that guy can be anything but one.
Yeah, what if Islam goes out there and looks great against Jack, maybe, you know, strikes with him for a bit, takes him down, submits him in the second or third round? Does that put him back on top? Like, do you consider that a more valuable win at a second division for a second belt than Ilya beating the version of Charles Oliveira who exists in 2025?
I'll answer it this way. I believe that they likely will put him back at one. But when everything's equal, right, and they both be champions. He goes in as an impressive win. Okay, well, Ilya just did the same thing. I mean, in all fairness, if everything's equal and you got to turn to the numbers, one of them's undefeated and one of them's not. And I know that rankings committee has a very short-term memory. I do too. And the last thing I saw seems to inspire me. Like, I do really understand that concept, so I would agree that it was possible. It would be wrong. It would be wrong to do that. And the timeline of this is everything. I don't think that fight's going to happen. At the same time, if we keep talking about it and it becomes big enough, that fight's going to happen. But let's say that it doesn't and we're 10 years down the road and I got to explain this time frame to somebody. I'm going to have to go by order of events. I'm going to have to say that Ilia Topuria was so sincere in his belief he could beat Islam. He was so sincere in his interest of fighting Islam that he walked away from the belt, which is a cardinal sin at the UFC. It put BJ Penn in a courtroom opposite Dana. It is, you can't do it at the UFC. He did it. And he came to the media and he picked a fight and he did everything he could thinking that is who we needed to go through. And then Islam left. And that's a very big deal. It's a very big deal. It's totally different. It's the same day and the UFC won't make it. He can't make, they're going to move Islam here and they're going to move. It's a big deal, the order. Because if it's all we have to go on is in the future, who tried to get the fight? The boys know who's going to win. I know you'll see press conferences this week. You'll have 11 fights and 22 guys say they're going to win. 11 of them mean it and the other 11 don't. You got to try to figure out, all right, who's who? Who's got the poker face on? When two guys walk to the ring, they know who's going to win 99% of the time. And those really great fights in those moments are when both guys truly thought it was them. But that's extremely rare. And if we're going to have to default to the only thing we have, which is who tried harder to make that fight happen, the timeline is everything, and it favors Topuria.
I don't disagree with that at all. I would love to be a fly on the wall for what exactly was said when Hunter Campbell went to Dagestan for a few days and hung out with Islam and the team or anything, because you hear the different stories of, you know, UFC, as you said, doesn't want this fight to happen. They see them both as stars, two very promotable guys. Why not have two great champions instead of
what a shark, dude.
Take a loss? What's up?
What a shark that Hunter Campbell is. For he real. Could have sent anybody. He could have done that by Zoom.
No.
He's the one with
Dana. Real business is not in person.
He could have sent him a text message. It wouldn't have changed anything. Hey, you're fighting Jack at 170, and I'm taking this belt off of you. He could have done all of that. He elected to get on a plane and have this face-to-face. Oh, by the way, he could have called and told him, get to the airport. I need to see you in Vegas. I thought that was a very cool move. I really did. There was a great one done over the weekend. Do you know Gary Shaw? Does that name ring a bell?
Of course.
All right. Well, Gary Shaw's a killer, and he's one of these guys that won't get his credit. But he is very hard behind the scenes. He was at a press conference, and he's filling the role of Dana, which is just a very hard thing to do. But they asked him a tough question. And for the second time, the UFC has been doing a fight night show where the audience is left, where the main event, the audience ended up leaving. It happened twice. So they asked Gary about it. And they asked him, will you do things different? Will you put a local hero in your main events? And Gary said, no, we won't do anything.
Dave Shaw, you're referring to. You were making me think Elite XC Gary Shaw.
Yeah. No, and I was thinking the same thing. No, I 100% agree, Dave. And you're thinking, they asked him, would he do anything different? And Dave told him, no. He said, when Dana White makes these fights, he makes the biggest and best fight that he can at that time. And if you're a true fight fan, and Dave turned it around. Dave then asked, he answered the question with a question, which is a very great move in arguments. But he answered the question by asking a question. He said, who wouldn't want to see that? And the whole room goes silent. And I'm only sharing, like, he did a really good, Dave did a really good job in that moment. But it was also a fair question. And I liked it. I like that you're giving Hunter some credit. I like that we could give Dave a little bit of shine. Like they've got a real... They got a real good team over there.
They do. What makes you so confident, 100% sure, is going to be Armin Sarukian getting the shot? I've said that, I'm pretty sure I said I'd eat that hat behind me if his next fight was for a title, just because it seems so grim, Chael. What has changed?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, first off, I'm obviously coming to you with information, whether I should have or I shouldn't. Secondly, I was the best man in his wedding. His name's Daryl Christian, and he's the wrestling coach of Armin Sarukian. Third, I just spoke to Coach Cal. I wanted to come out and I wanted to film Chimaev training, and it turns out that Sarukian's in the room. Mm-hmm. And then a bigger tell also was what Ilya did a week ago, which is said, I don't want to fight. And the greats always, they have a, they don't even know they have it. They don't even know. Coaches will break them down. It's the same with technique. A coach will have to break. Hey, he slips here before he throws hook. Chuck Liddell had a big thing that he would blink before he threw punches. I'm just sharing, like, everybody has something that gets them going. Your job is to go find out what it is, but it's not any different in promotion. Ilya's first move for doing a fight is to deny the fight. The only person that he's ever openly said, I'll fight, is Patty. Everybody else that he's getting ready to fight, he denies. It's just his approach. Anderson had one. Anderson would always deny the fight. He'd let that run for about 2 weeks. He would then accept the fight. He would let that run for about a month. He would then slip an injury report to the media where you think the fight is off. It's not going to happen. He'd get his run out of that, and then he'd come out and tell everybody, I'm fine, and it's on. I'm only sharing. That was his system. 100% of his fights, he built the same way. Ilya is not any different, whether he knows it about himself or not. But Ilya's first move when he's going to fight a guy, aside from Patty, is to say, I'm not fighting the guy.
Very interesting, because I thought, you know, it was a four-man race for a little bit there. Max Holloway has been removed from that, I guess. He posted on his YouTube channel that he has a hand injury that's likely to keep...
You thought legitimately that Max...
No, but I was just saying these are the people that were discussed. He's officially out of the running with the hand. I thought Justin Gaethje had a good chance just because he is so late in his career. There might not be a time you could justify a title shot for him. And truly, I think for Ilya's resume, you look at the win streak, like that would be a nice one to have. You could maybe get him another great highlight. The Patty fight, you know, we know the story there. This one with Armin feels like the best fight in terms of an MMA fight, the highest level fight, the most competitive fight of the bunch, but maybe the toughest sell. But maybe they've changed that over the past couple of weeks here with so much talk. Sure. Armin had another very nasty tweet about Ilya, you know, very recently here. So I don't know. I'm just surprised after everything that's gone on with Armin that they are going this direction.
Yes. Well, and I agree. I mean, he got put in a purgatory. Yeah. He had to get out of it, but he did. When he showed up, got licensed, weighed in, went through a training camp, he's got to sit in the first row and then even watch Patty the Batty get in the ring and get the attention and not him. I'm just saying. There is an appreciation historically that's shown, and it's also going to be shown to him.
Okay, so...
Hey, by the way, Gaethje is the right answer to every question that you have. If there's any question at 155, who should main event? Who should be villain? Who should we turn to? Who does the crowd like? Justin Gaethje is always the right answer, but two of his last four matches were title fights. So his biggest argument, and he's not wrong, but it's his number one argument as to why he should get it is, hey, look at all I've done here. I've only said yes, and now for a change, I'm asking for something, and I want it. The same as you wanted things before, and I always did them for you. That's a great argument, except two of his last four were for the belt. Three of his last seven, well, I think it was four of his last seven, were for the belt. So that's the only part where it's like, hey, we love to spread this around. We do love to reward guys, but Justin, we put you in there with Poirier, put the belt around you. We brought you to 300, had you defend that belt for the first time. Then you didn't successfully defend it. Like it's one of these things where I do hope that Justin can feel that way because he appears to be very upset to say, hey, I'll take my ball and go home. And he's not bluffing, but I don't want him to feel that way. I want him to feel loved and I want him to feel appreciated. I'm just offering this because I believe that he is, and I believe that has been shown. And I think if he thought about it and realized two of his last four matches were title fights, it might change him a little bit.
I'd agree. So to answer the question, Chael, if Ilya fights Armin in December, do you feel Ilya wins that fight? And I guess then who is number one pound for pound? If he loses, obviously it would be Islam. What if Islam and Ilya both lose their next fight? Then who's number one pound for pound too? That's also an interesting layer. But I guess to the real question, do you think Ilya beats Armin if they fight?
Well, I'll answer you like this. They have one common opponent so far, which is Charles Oliveira, and wildly different matches. So I think that that's going to steer. Right? When you don't have head-to-head competition, you must fall to common opponent. So I would understand where Ilya is going to be the favorite, but matchup-wise, the hardest match for Ilya is Armin Sarukian. So as this thing gets a little closer, maybe allow me to come back and give you an actual prediction. I think that the world would lean towards Topuri right now. He's just the flavor. He's hot. He's undefeated. He's the champion of the world. Should be two division champion and BMF champion linear wise. But boy, Sarukian gets his hands on you. You got a problem.
Indeed, you do. Well, that's my five questions, my five biggest questions for the rest of 2025, Chael. I hope I didn't overlook anything. I appreciate your answers, but we'll see what the answers in reality come to be. It's always great to have you here on The Bonfire. Everyone subscribe, follow this man's YouTube channel, all the social medias. He is the GOAT. He is Chael Sonnen. I will be back to wrap things up. Thanks, Chael. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much once again to Chael for all that time. Wow, over an hour, means a lot. It's much appreciated. Once again, grateful for all the support of being where I am now, as I've just passed my 12-year anniversary as a, I guess, fully employed, full-time person. Started my journey a few years before that, but I consider that time, the August 1st date, to be kind of the benchmark of when I really got to do what I do in this industry and pursue the dream full time with nothing holding me back. So again, shout out to everyone who helped make that true. Shout out to Chael Sonnen for appearing here once again on the show. Shout out to my man, Kamikaze Abhi Subban, who's not only been on the journey here on the Bonfire, the one over at MMA Junkie as well, for almost as long as I've been there. So love you, brother. Thank you for producing the show. And thank you to all of you for listening, for watching the show. And it's coming up soon here, everyone. UFC 319 is around the corner. We're going to have something good for fight week. So until then, I will see you back here by the Bonfire.